Follow Elizabeth on Twitter right now. Keyword Food Nation Radio. And visit ElizabethDoherty.com for restaurant reviews, recipes, her blog, and a whole lot more. Once again, here's Elizabeth.
Hey, everybody, we're back. You're listening to Food Nation Radio Network. I'm Elizabeth Doherty. We have Professor Don Huber on the phone. He identified a virus in one of the genetically modified crops that we talked to him about. And we just found an article in the Daily Mail in the UK that pretty much confirms that there is an issue with some of these crops. Welcome to the show.
Appreciate being here.
Can you tell people what you do, what your background is?
I'm a plant pathologist, soil microbiologist. My career, 55-year career, has been dedicated to nutrient disease, microbial interaction, and ag chemical nutrient disease interactions. Retired from Purdue University, so I'm emeritus status there.
We talked to you previously, and you identified a virus. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I had brought up concern that many of us have for an entity. We're not sure that it's a virus. In fact, we're quite sure it's not a virus that causes reproductive failure. Veterinarians identified that first, and we're finding it occurring in cattle, horses, sheep, pigs, goats, and it has been found in humans causing reproductive failure.
Wow.
That would be both infertility in male and female, as well as miscarriages.
So is it a protein that you found?
No. I guess there are three possibilities. We're in the process of doing the DNA analysis now.
To identify it.
It could also be two other entities that are, all three of these would be self-replicating, but two of them would not be classified as living entities, even though they're able to self-replicate. So we're just in the process, kind of that final stages of identification of that. And the veterinarians have been working since 2005 to get to this point. So we're feeling really good at having accomplished as much as we have to get to this point where hopefully we can put a name on that one.
So where are you at with this research currently?
On the new entity, there has been one series of DNA analysis. We have two others that need to be completed. And then we have a lot of other research that's gone on to also look at its characteristics and essentially range of animals that are affected by it.
We're talking about corn, right?
Well, we find it in high concentrations in the genetically engineered corn and soybeans. Initially, the veterinarians, and after they had been able to complete Koch's postulates to show that it was the cause of reproductive failure, I started looking at the feed and initially found it in the high concentrations in soybean meal in feed rations.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, it's been found in corn, silage, and other crops where either glyphosate has been used as the herbicide or in the genetically engineered crops.
So it's either or, either the ones that were engineered to be resistant to what's the active ingredient that we know as Roundup generally, or was sprayed with Roundup.
Yes, that's where we find the highest concentrations of this entity. It's not always limited just to those, but that's where it seems to be more problematic.
Well, for people who don't know, some of these plants, the corn and the soy, in fact, the majority of the corn and soy grown in the United States at this point, has been engineered to be resistant to that chemical, that active ingredient in Roundup. So what you're saying has pretty wide-ranging implications.
Yes, 98% of our soybeans would be Roundup ready, and I believe about 70% of our corn now.
How did you find out that this was an issue? Did someone come to you and say, hey, my livestock are not reproducing, or what happened?
A group of us were looking at Goss's wilt and the epidemic of sudden death syndrome that we've had the last few years. And there's more extensive symptom that we see with Goss's wilt especially than we were recognizing at least 30 years ago. And so in trying to pursue why we were seeing that different symptomatology, much greater virulence than that, mm-hmm. we were also interacting with some of the veterinarians that were investigating reproductive failure in the animals. Mm-hmm. And so as we started looking, we started seeing commonalities between those two with the genetic engineering and also with the usage of glyphosate. Mm-hmm. And as we started sharing notes, the notes coincided and one thing just led to another as far as those interactions that we see taking place now.
How do we make that connection to human reproductive studies?
We had individuals who were having difficulty carrying a pregnancy, and that investigation, the entity was identified in those situations.
Wow.
As you know, it's becoming a very serious concern with the drop in fertility in the United States. I think USA Today had an article dropped 30% in the last 5 years.
Right.
Again, in the U.S., so that we may be on the way to an extinct species if that continues.
And what about sudden infant death syndrome? Do you think there's a connection there?
Yes, that ties in a different manner. And that's some very excellent research that's been completed now and published in the scientific journals from a group of veterinarians at Leipzig University, Dr. Monica Kruger and the group there, that have been able to pin a lot of these other problems down or connect the dots, mm-hmm. so that we see that all of the gut-type diseases have a tie back to the glyphosate, and that's that it's a very powerful antibiotic that is toxic and kills our intestinal beneficial microorganisms that we rely on for nutrients and vitamins. And in killing those off and changing that ecology of our GI tract, it then removes the natural control that we have for Clostridium botulinum. So that as the Clostridium is no longer suppressed by those intestinal microorganisms that would normally be beneficially controlling those diseases, the Clostridium then produces the bot neurotoxin and brings about eventual death of cattle. Is where we see it as chronic botulism, and some of our dairies are really struggling to keep in existence because of that disease. It's an epidemic in some of the European countries where they're using high concentrations of imported soybeans from the U.S. or Argentina.
Yeah, they're still using the feed over there, even though largely they don't eat, the humans don't eat the GMO food, soy and corn. It's still being used in the feed from what I understand.
Yes, and also they do use some of the products, soybean meal and soy protein and a lot of those things in our food chain. So Dr. Kruger's group has shown is that as little as a tenth of a part per million of glyphosate in the food will kill the beneficial organisms and then permit the Clostridia to develop. And with the neurotoxin, it causes the respiratory process to shut down so that you have death of the animal. A doctor that has worked on sudden death syndrome on infants found that in those cases where they've been able to test them for the presence of the bot neurotoxin, then in every case they find that toxin present.
So this is translating into really a public safety issue.
It's a very serious safety issue for us because of the very powerful antibiotic effect against our beneficial microflora in our intestines.
Now, when you say this is self-replicating, what do you mean by that?
It's able to reproduce itself without necessarily having the DNA as an entity. For instance, a prion
right.
is a protein, but it doesn't contain DNA and can self-replicate. Another entity that can do that would be the nanobacter.
Okay.
Those latter two entities don't have DNA with them, but yet they're able to self-replicate in the right environment.
So what happens when you stop eating it? Does it still replicate?
It could in the system, yes.
Would it decline over time, or does it matter?
These are new enough to science that we're not sure.
You're not sure yet.
There's just a lot that we don't know. A lot of research that needs to be done. Some of it should have been done 30 or 35 years ago, literally in determining the safety of these products, but it was never done in that capacity.
And now we have a big set of issues on our hands. Professor, you mentioned in your research something about formaldehyde involved in these plant products. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Actually, what we're finding is that as we really start looking at the safety of the genetic engineering process or the products that are being applied directly to our food as a result of the genetic engineering process, we keep finding more and more concerns and toxic entities that are present. One of those identified this year is the presence of high levels of formaldehyde in the GMO. We don't find it in the non-GMO corn.
Okay.
These levels are in addition to the relatively high levels of glyphosate that we're finding in our crops and our food products. But we're also finding then formaldehyde, which could be coming from a blocked metabolic system from the genetic engineering process, or it could be a degradation product of the glyphosate that is applied to it.
And what kind of effect does that have on people?
Well, the highest level of formaldehyde, I understand, that was found in the FEMA trailers that was making people sick was 0.097 parts per million. What has been found in genetically engineered corn is 200 parts per million.
Unbelievable.
We wondered for a long time how deer and squirrels and mice could tell the difference between a genetically engineered and a non-engineered corn. Certainly formaldehyde would be intense enough at levels well below that 200 parts per million for them to be able to detect it and avoid it.
We've been talking with Professor Don Huber, Professor Emeritus at Purdue University. We greatly appreciate your time talking to us today.
Oh, many thanks. It's a serious concern, one that needs to be addressed at the highest levels, and we certainly need to have greater knowledge of what we're eating and what contains some of these products than we have currently.
Absolutely. You've been listening to Food Nation Radio Network. We'll be right back.